This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started with House Appropriations this afternoon. So I would ask everyone to go ahead and take a seat. Make sure your phones are turned to silent. If you're going to be testifying, please make sure you've signed in. If you have any handouts, you can get them to the pages and they can distribute those. And then I will ask the secretary to call the roll, please.
Representative Duba.
Here.
Fitzgerald.
Present.
Gross. Gross.
Here.
Haugard.
Here.
May.
Here.
Mills.
Here.
Mullally.
Absent, excused.
Vice Chair Howard.
Here.
Chair Carr.
Here.
Chair Carr is remote. Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. All right. So at this time, I see one page in here. Is the other one? Okay. We'll just have you guys come up to the mic, if you will. Let us know who you are, where you're from, and what your favorite ice cream is. Because that's what I want right now.
Hi, I'm Madeline Brink. I'm a senior at Brookings High School, and next year I'm planning to major in political science at SDSU.
Hello, my name is Emily Hervey. I'm a senior at Willow Lake High School, and I do not plan to continue school. I just plan to hopefully start a family.
I love that. I love both of them, but it's, you know, everything is good. All right, so we have two bill hearings today. The first up is House Bill 1021 to make an appropriation to reimburse certain healthcare professionals who have complied with the requirements for certain healthcare recruitment assistance programs and to declare an emergency. So at this time, I would ask any proponents to come up. Just make sure you identify yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. If you can't hear me, I'll take my mask off, but okay. Thank you. Lynn Valenti, Deputy Secretary, Department of Health. House Bill 1021 is a special appropriation to reimburse healthcare professionals who have completed one of our Department of Health recruitment assistance programs. For those of you who have been in the legislature, this will be familiar to you as it's an annual appropriation. We know that there is a national shortage of healthcare workers, and this is especially true in rural states like ours. The pandemic has really shown a spotlight on how critical it is to have an adequate healthcare workforce. This is especially true in our rural communities. We have two different programs, the Recruitment Assistance Program, which is designed to help rural communities recruit doctors, dentists, nurse practitioners, certified nurse midwives, and physician assistants. We also have our Rural Healthcare Facility Recruitment Assistance Program, which is designed to help rural healthcare facilities recruit healthcare professionals such as nurses, pharmacists, physical therapists, LPNs. The full list can be found in the bill brief on the back side of the second page. It also lists the eligible healthcare facilities, which include hospitals, nursing facilities, community support providers, intermediate care facilities for those with intellectual disabilities. Both programs work the same way. 3-year commitment by the healthcare professional in exchange for a recruitment incentive payment. Payment is split between the state and the community or the healthcare facility, depending upon the size of the community. For our recruitment assistance program, in communities of 2,500 people or less, the state pays 75% of the total amount, and the community or the facility would pay the 25%. In communities of 2,500 to 5,000, it's a 50-50 split. And in communities 5,000 to 10,000, the state pays 25%, and the community would pay, or facility would pay, the 75%. For our recruitment health care facility assistance program, in communities 25,000 or less, the state pays 75% of the total amount. And for those communities 2,500 to 10,000, it's a 50-50 split. The facility or the community may pay their portion of the payment at any time during that three-year commitment. But the state does not pay its portion until after the individual or the professional has completed their three-year commitment period. Both programs are limited to rural communities with populations of 10,000 or less. The amount of the payment varies by program and the type of healthcare professional participating. Doctors and dentists receive payment equal to twice the in-state resident tuition at the USD School of Medicine for the four most recent academic years. Currently, that's $243,634. And then for our mid-levels, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and nurse midwives, the payment is equal to twice the USD resident tuition for the PA program for the three most recent academic years. And that would be this year, that amount would be $69,108. For our rural health care facilities participants, examples such as nurses, pharmacists, PTs, it's a $10,000 incentive payment. These are very popular programs in our state. For physicians, we have 15 slots, and currently we have 14 physicians participating. Dentists, we have 5 slots, and we have 5 participating. Mid-levels, we have 15 slots, and 15 of those professionals are participating. And these numbers are the total or the cap in the program at any given time. For our rural healthcare facility program, all of the slots are filled every year, and that's 60 slots each year. Not only is recruitment of our healthcare professionals important, equally important is retaining these professionals in those rural communities once they agree to start their service there. These programs work. Retention rates are high. Our hope with these programs are that participants will continue to practice in the rural community well beyond that three-year commitment. And a majority of them do. In fact, the programs have been around long enough that we're starting to see retirements and practitioners leaving communities after long-term stays. To date, with respect to physicians, we have a 71.9% retention rate, and that is a 10-year retention rate. So of the physicians that have been participating in the program, 71.9 are currently participating in the rural community that recruited them, or they remained in the community for at least 10 years. For dentists, that number is 78.9%. For our PAs, nurse practitioners, and nurse midwives, it's an 84.2% retention rate after for at least 10 years after completion. With respect to our Rural Health Facility Recruitment Assistance Program, since the program's inception, we've had about 588 participants, and 68% of those individuals have either completed the program or are currently participating in the program that recruited them. In FY 2022, a total of 5 providers, 3 docs, and 2 certified nurse practitioners will be completing our recruitment assistance program, and a total of 45 healthcare professionals will be completing the health facility program. And you'll see in the handout those communities and that are represented, as well as the professions and the facilities, for a total request of $791,967. And the breakout is between the two is for the recruitment assistance, it's $521,967, and for the facility recruitment, it's $270,000. Additional information is in the bill brief that I have distributed. And with that, Madam Chair and committee members, we would respectfully ask for your support of 1021, and I would stand by for questions.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents in the room? Go ahead and make sure you state your name.
Yes, I will, Madam Chairman. Welcome. Hello, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Tim Rave, Sadaho. That's representing 54 nonprofit hospitals in the state, 46 long-term care facilities. The Deputy Secretary did an outstanding job of walking through the program. For those of us that have been around this process for a long time, this is one of those programs that really, truly works. And not only does it work, it's essential, it's critical in getting providers to some of our smallest rural communities. You can imagine the challenge you have in recruiting healthcare professionals to some of our remote rural communities. And it's not only the rural communities. Madison, South Dakota, if those of you that attended our fall legislative forums, Tammy Miller, the CEO there, has told stories of recruiting five providers, two doctors, I believe, and three advanced practitioners to the Madison Community Hospital. And this program is essential in getting folks to even come to Madison, and that's 35 miles from Sioux Falls. So I would very much appreciate your support of the program. Stand down and stand by for questions. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Rave. And further proponent testimony.
Madam Chair. Brad Hoffman with the South Dakota Healthcare Association. We represent nursing homes and assisted livings around the state. I just want to add my voice to what you've heard already. Staffing is incredibly difficult for our members, especially our more rural members. It has been that way for a long time. This program has been effective over many, many years and certainly very popular among our membership. It's a great tool in their toolbox to help make sure they get people into their buildings. So I appreciate the committee's support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Any other proponent testimony? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to opponent testimony.
All right. Madam Chair?
Yep.
Brian Burge from Beersford. Just being consistent on speaking on this matter, while the program is very effective in what it achieves, and for a brother who went to USD for med school, graduated as an ER doctor, I can attest, there is no other great way to retain talent in the state without compensating at the moment. But the challenge of the bill as it remains in its, just as it sits, does not solve the root problem of increasing more supply of those doctors into the pipeline. This is just a midstream expensive method to try to pull those doctors midstream that are already out there. I encourage you, as you look for it, you do have to write this check. This is already a promise that's been made. But use that same passion to find a way to increase the throughput and number of doctors available and reduce the overall cost by increasing supply of talent. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Any other opponent testimony? All right. We'll go ahead and close that up then. I'll waive rebuttal and go to committee questions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mills.
I have a couple questions for Deputy Secretary Valenti, please. Ms. Valenti, you made mention, I've been aware of this program and have supported it in the past and recognize that it's doing good work. I just, this is my first opportunity to have some questions answered that I've had, and hearing what you said leads me to a couple of those. You mentioned that I believe the state pays its share of the agreement toward the end of the fulfillment when the folks are fulfilling their responsibilities. Is that correct?
Madam Chair? Yes, that's correct. The state pays once the commitment is fulfilled.
Follow up? Thank you, Madam Chair. And you mentioned that the community can pay theirs at any time. What's typical?
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you for the question. I think it varies, to be honest. I guess there may be some others that know that in particular, but I think it just depends upon the community and the arrangement that they make with the particular provider.
Follow up. You also mentioned that the programs are popular, and then you talked about the slots that were available, and it sounded like they were pretty much all filled. And that makes me wonder, do we have more applicants than we have slots?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. That varies from year to year. For example, right now we have one physician slot open. Some years, I think last year we had a mid-level position open. This year it's full. We do work with communities that can foresee the need, and it's done, awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. And so our staff is working with communities and kind of getting all the information that they need available so that when a slot becomes available, you know, we look at, you know, who has their application in.
Follow-up.
Go ahead.
Is it typical for there to be more applicants than slots? Or, I mean, you mentioned a couple of times when you have an open slot, but historically, since this program's been going on for many years, typically do we have more applicants than slots?
Madam Chair, thank you. The rural healthcare facility slots, those 60 slots are consistently filled each year, is my understanding. For our wrap with the docs, the dentists, and the mid-levels, that can vary by year. It's usually close, but I wouldn't say that we see waiting lists or long waiting lists.
One more question. So, and the one that's consistently filling, that leads me to wonder, has there been thought given to perhaps, you know, maybe lowering the payment, whatever you'd like to say, so that more slots could be available, and, you know, trying to find that threshold where we're getting as many folks out there as we can with the dollars that we have available. Has that been considered?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. That's a great question. It has been, we have discussed that in the past. What I would tell you is that, you know, healthcare provider shortage is a true shortage. And so we see sometimes the larger communities and the larger providers, the systems being able to offer, you know, hiring incentives or hiring bonuses. And so we really try to make this so that it is an incentive to get a provider to go to a rural community, maybe where otherwise they wouldn't if all things were equal.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Further questions? Representative Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I'm understanding this correctly, these are the communities on that back page where individuals are sent?
Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. Yes, so these are the facilities. We have 45 eligible healthcare professionals this year who have complied with the requirements, and you see there on that second page the numbers of the communities there that they're representing there. So Armour, Beardsford, Bodle, Brandon, those are those for the health facilities recruitment. And on the front page is you could see where the physicians and the two nurse practitioners, what communities they are currently working in.
I have a follow-up. So I don't see very many West River. I do see Lemon, and that's great. Is there not a need West River compared to East River, or maybe you can explain to me?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. You know, it's an application process,
okay,
and it's open to any of these, you know, communities that are 10,000 or less.
10,000. I'm just thinking of like Butte County, Belfouche, mm-hmm, that area in there, Newell. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay, I have a few, just a couple. I was just looking at, so, you know, maybe I'm a little more curious this year since I've been dealing with tuition rates and stuff for my younger son. First question, why are the amounts so different between the two MDs and the DO? You know, we go from one MD 100, 1.95, and the other MD is 164,250.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. In the first case, with respect to Viborg, because that has a population of 786 individuals, the state is paying 75%. With respect to Mobridge, that's a 50-50 split.
Thank you. Okay, so then I go, though, so physicians and dentists get an amount equal to basically 2 years' worth of tuition, is that right?
It's two times the in-state resident tuition at the USD School of Medicine for the four most recent academic years.
Okay, so basically they paid to go to school for 4 years, but under this program, then we're paying them twice that amount if they complete the program?
For the twice the amount of the tuition, yes, Madam
okay.
Chair.
Okay, thank you. I would say, wow, I wish my son had me. This is a pretty good program. This is a very good program. So, yeah. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Gross.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That raised some question in my mind how that formula works again. Can you please restate the payment formula, just say for the MDs?
Sure. Payment is equal to twice the resident tuition at the USD School of Medicine, so in-state tuition, for the four most recent academic years when they come on to the program. So there's also, like this year, that rate would be $243,634 if you were signing a contract today. I would note that that's the resident tuition rate, so that doesn't include books or fees, you know, that also accompany going to school. And then and that's for dentists as well, for PAs, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, payment is equal to twice the resident tuition for the PA program, physician assistant program, for the three most recent academic years.
Follow up, if I may. So it's the total of those tuitions or the average of those tuitions?
It's the tuition amount that is charged to a resident July 1st of that year. So we look on July 1st when the regents set their tuition, and we see what that amount is, and then we take that over the 4 years. So, you know, for example, the $243,634 took the tuition from the 2016 to 27 year academic year, 2017 to 2018, 18 to 19, and 19 to 20, and then doubled it.
Follow up one more time, if I may. So if someone who's finishing up now and paid those levels of tuition, when they finish the program, they will get the 240-some thousand?
Yes.
When they complete the program?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, oh, Representative Mullally.
Just a real quick question. I apologize for coming in late, but what was the recidivity rate?
The retention rate is for physicians, it's 71.9 are currently participating, still in the rural community that recruited them or remained in the community for at least 10 years after completing the program. For dentists, it's 78.9%, and for mid-levels, it's 84.2%.
Just a follow-up, thank you. What about the lower level?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. That 68% for the Facility Recruitment Assistance Program.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, if not, we'll go into committee discussion and or action.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move we do pass.
Okay. Okay, so we have a due pass on House Bill 1021 to make an appropriation to reimburse certain healthcare professionals who have complied with the requirements for certain healthcare recruitment assistance programs and to declare an emergency. Do you have any comments on the
second
motion?
Restate the due pass by Duba, seconded by Mayor.
So the due pass by Representative Duba.
Seconded by Mayor.
Seconded by Representative May.
Discussion on the motion.
And is there any discussion on the motion?
It's for the journal because the secretary is out of the
room. Okay.
Go ahead.
Any discussion on the motion?
I think these students have fulfilled their obligation, and it is, and so we need to carry out our duty and pass the bill.
I would agree. It is a good bill. I will say it. I didn't probably until this year fully realize that we're actually doing 8 years worth of tuition assistance, two times the four. It just took me a while to realize that. So it's a phenomenal, phenomenal deal for these young men and women. Okay, we are fulfilling our obligation to them, and we have a motion and a second. So I will have the secretary call the roll now.
Representative Duba.
Aye.
Fitzgerald.
Aye.
Gross.
Aye.
Haugard.
Aye.
Mays.
Aye.
Mills.
Aye.
Mullally.
Aye.
Vice Chair Howard.
Aye.
Chair Carr.
Aye.
Madam Chair, you have 9 votes. No BAs.
Thank you. And with a 9-0 vote, House Bill 1021 has passed and will move to the floor. And all right, now we will be moving into House Bill 1221 to provide an appropriation for the commissioning and placement of presidential statues. Thank you. Are there any proponent testimonies?
There's one, Madam Chair. Representative Spencer Goss, District 23. I have an amendment for the body. This chair doesn't adjust, and I am not a short or small man, so I'm going to lean over. It is 1221A. It should be on the website, so it should have been distributed. I would like the committee, it is a hoghouse amendment, so Madam Chair, if it is adequate, I would ask that you ask one of your members to move the motion at this time.
Okay. Would somebody like to make that motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move the amendment.
Second.
Okay, so at this time we have a motion by Representative Gross and a second by Representative Haugard to move the amendment 1221A.
And Madam Chair, if I may just briefly, very briefly, because I'll also ask it'll be ultimately up to you guys, but due to the fact that it's a hog house, I'll ask that you defer action until your future meeting, if you will, just to be safe and to be adequate with everyone. As you noticed, that the original bill was to put some statutes at the top of the rotunda. Well, clearly with my hog house amendment, that was not the original intention. I just needed time. We are currently under investigation and looking into an idea to memorialize, thank you, that's a big word there, a former representative that served with many of us in this particular room at this time, and also an individual that was a staunch individual in terms of being involved in the state fair and in his local community, and in Representative Bob Glanzer. You'll notice that there is not a dollar amount at this time, as we are still looking into other areas and avenues in which that will cost. We do feel pretty confident that the cost will not be substantial. So, that being said, that is the Hog House Amendment. If you wish to defer action, please do so. Once we take up the bill, the finalized bill, there will also need to be a title amendment. But I will stand by for questions or comments.
Okay, so we're on Amendment 1221A that has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Well, you threw me for a loop, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Mullally.
I didn't bring my computer. How are you thinking of memorializing him? And is this at the Aberdeen? Oh.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, and this is my fault because I did not bring paper forms to distribute, if I may, Madam Chair. This will be at the DEX complex or the livestock complex built at the State Fair. Yep, in Huron.
Not in Aberdeen. No, this is
in Huron.
Huron.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
But yes, Madam Chair, that's where it'll be. I should have brought in paper copies. I apologize.
And how are you going to, are you thinking a plaque, a statue, blah, blah, blah?
Madam Chair. At this particular time, we're engaging with the company about a plaque and or a statue. It's going to be dependent on cost, and that would be another reason why I would ask that you defer this bill. Because by your next meeting or next week, I will have that answer finalized for you. And that would be why there's only $1 in this bill at this time.
So we will be deferring action. You'll have an opportunity to study the amendment. Okay. All right, any further discussion? All right, if there's no further discussion, we do have a motion and a second, so I will restate the amendment. It is an amendment to House Bill 1221. It's on your computer under 1221A. And it will be an act to provide an appropriation for memorializing former Representative Bob Glanzer at the Livestock and Equestrian Complex at the State Fair and to declare an emergency. And since it's an amendment, we'll have a voice vote. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. All right. The amendment passes, and we will defer action on that bill to a date in the future, to be decided in the future. So... All right. Oh, and before we go off air, I did want to briefly mention, so the other day we took up House Bill 1020, and that ended in a vote of 4-3, which does not have the majority of the members elect. So that was not final action on that bill. So we will be readdressing that bill at a future date as well. So with that, that concludes our business for today, and I would entertain a motion. Yes, Representative May.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. With a motion to adjourn and a second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We are adjourned.